Content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from the News and Observer. It's not from the News and Observer, from the Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Well, it's been a big week in North Carolina with the primaries, some of the first in the country. And much of our program today will be about the primaries and the outcomes from the primaries. The first article, What We Learned from the 2026 Primaries, was written by Brian Anderson. The primary elections Tuesday were a train wreck for many sitting Democratic and Republican state lawmakers in competitive races. Governor Josh Stein's endorsements performed well, and lots of new faces are headed to Raleigh. Here are our takeaways from the primaries. GOP establishment takes a hit. Republican incumbents in the General Assembly took a beating Tuesday with state Senate leader Phil Berger's virtual tie with Rockingham County Sheriff Sam Page as the most obvious example. Berger's allies poured millions of dollars into the race, only to come up two votes short at the end of Tuesday night. The race appears headed for a recount. Other members of the GOP establishment suffered similar losses. Republican Senator Chris Meesmer of Cabarrus County lost to former State Representative Kevin Crutchfield by 7 percentage points. Republican Representative Reese Pirtle of Rockingham County lost to Attorney Seth Woodall by 18 points. Republican Representative Kelly Hastings of Gaston County lost to pharmacist Caroline Eason by 7 points. And Republican Representative Mark Pless of Haywood County lost to local school board member Jimmy Rogers by 9 points. There were a couple of notable exceptions, including Representative Jake Johnson, cruising to victory over a well-resourced opponent in former Representative Mike Hager. In addition, Representative Keith Kidwell of Beaufort County lost to farmer Darren Armstrong by 5 points. But that counts as an establishment win because Kidwell, an outspoken leader of the House Freedom Caucus, had drawn the ire of colleagues in a dispute over an agriculture bill and for opposing a push to ban shrimp trawling. With the jury still out on whether Page won his primary, Eason pulled off the biggest upset of the night on the Republican side over the 8-term Hastings. Dems' problem children go down. The state legislative candidates the Democratic Party targeted for siding with Republicans in overturning Stein's vetoes all went down. Democratic Representative Shelley Willingham of Edgecombe County lost to Minister Patricia Smith by 11 points. Democratic Representative Nasif Majid of Mecklenburg County lost to healthcare advocate Valeria Levy by 42 points. And Democratic Representative Carla Cunningham of Mecklenburg County lost to Reverend Rodney Sadler by 48 points. The losses are a victory for Democrats seeking more party discipline. The blows to the centrist wing of the Democratic Party could make lawmakers in swing districts think twice about siding with Republicans in the future. Good night for Stein. The Democratic governor went 2 for 2 with his endorsements of Sadler over Cunningham and of State Representative Rodney Pierce, who fended off a primary challenge from former Representative Michael Ray. Republicans currently have a supermajority in the state Senate and are 1 seat short in the House, so they have needed help from at least one Democrat to overturn Stein's vetoes. The makeup of both chambers could change after the November general election, but the ousters of several moderate Democrats probably means Stein is less likely to see vetoes overturned in 2027. Expect a lot of new faces. 10 current state legislative office holders declined to seek re-election. Republican Senator Bobby Hannig, Democratic Representative Brian Cohn, and Republican Representatives Matthew Winslow, Ted Davis, William Brisson, John Sauls, Mark Brody, Stephen Ross, Harry Warren, and Sarah Stevens. Between those who declined to run and those who lost Tuesday, more than 1 in 10 current office holders won't be returning to Raleigh next year. And this is before the general election, which is likely to produce further turnover. One of the new faces in the building will likely be former Superior Court Judge Jerry Tillett, who won the primary for Hannig's seat despite allegations that he'd made racist remarks in an audio recording. Nothing to see here. The primaries in various congressional races turned out roughly as expected. Former Democratic Governor Roy Cooper and former Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Whatley handily won their respective primaries for the U.S. Senate race, which could be the most expensive in history. The only real surprise from either primary was the fact that former Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Michelle Morrow finished in fourth place instead of third. In the first congressional district Republican primary, Army veteran Lori Buckhout edged out Carteret County Sheriff Asa Buck. She's now poised for a rematch with Democratic U.S. Representative Don Davis. The 4th Congressional District Democratic primary was still too close to call Wednesday morning, more of that later, because it remained within the one-point recount threshold. Durham County Commissioner Nida Alam, who trails incumbent Representative Valerie Fushi, has vowed to pursue a recount, though provisional ballots could take the race out of the recount territory. The lawyers always win. Election law attorneys in North Carolina may be about to temporarily relocate to the Triad for the next phase of the Berger-Page battle in exchange for piles of money. Who says elections end on election night? Next, we have an article about how the Charlotte race for Carla Cunningham developed and then what actually happened in the primary election. How ICE turned Charlotte's Democratic primary into a battleground. This is by Greg LaCour. It was a windy and cold day outside, but stuffy in the fellowship hall where the candidates prepared to preach to primary voters. A crowd of about 40 shuffled into Little Rock AME Zion Church, one of Charlotte's oldest black places of worship, in a corner of the city center. They peeled off wool coats, hats, and scarves and took their seats in the pews. It was January 15th, 4 days before Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The NAACP's Charlotte Branch and Charlotte Black Voter Project had organized this candidates' forum, one of several they hosted in advance of the March 3rd Democratic primary. Justice, especially around immigration, was on everyone's minds. A U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent had shot and killed Renee Good in Minneapolis 8 days earlier, and last November's Operation Charlotte's Web had spread fear throughout the city's Latino community. Even in the warmth of the fellowship hall, hard questions loomed, as they do over the nation. Who has the right to live in this city, state, country? Who resides here legally? Who doesn't? And what should authorities do about the difference? Among the invited guests, the invited candidates, were the two main contenders for the NC House District 106 seat. Until this election cycle, the primary was a barely contested layup for Carla Cunningham, now a 7-term incumbent. The general election was a foregone conclusion in a heavily Democratic district that includes parts of Northeast Charlotte and Huntersville. But immigration, and especially a vote and floor speech Cunningham delivered on the issue last summer, turned the primary campaign into one of the most ferocious and closely watched races in North Carolina. Just after the new year, Democratic Governor Josh Stein took the unusual step of not only endorsing in a legislative primary, but siding with a challenger who had never run for public office, the Reverend Rodney Sadler, a 58-year-old biblical scholar and activist. This isn't something that you generally see in state legislative races. It's certainly not anything I can remember happening very frequently in North Carolina, said Jason Windett, a professor of political science and public administration at UNC Charlotte. For a Democratic governor to get involved in a district where we know the winner is going to be a Democrat is pretty extraordinary. Cunningham, 64, wore a fuchsia suit to the forum. Sadler, in black clerical attire, sat beside her at the candidate's table. They were once allies on issues like Medicaid expansion. Cunningham is a registered nurse. But on this cold evening, neither acknowledged the other. A third candidate at the table, Vermano Bowman, ran in the 2024 primary and lost to Cunningham by 69 points. All three candidates are black. Sadler is running with the endorsement of the Black Political Caucus of Charlotte-Mecklenburg, the most powerful local political organization. About 15 minutes in, the moderator asked, "As an elected official, can you help protect immigrant families in the community from undue fear or discrimination?" Cunningham replied that she supports sheriff's cooperation with immigration and customs enforcement because it's safer for the community. The alternative is something like Charlotte's Web, in which agents patrolled the streets with little local oversight. "So I would say the best option for people, don't go out there," she advised. "Stay in your home, where you can be safe and know what rights you have." The remarks drew a smattering of polite, barely audible claps. Sadler responded in his booming preacher's voice, "My parents told me very clearly when I was a child, love God, love your neighbor, and love the stranger," he said. "We have come far too far as a country to start scapegoating some among us. I want to say this very clearly. If you don't love everybody, then you shouldn't represent anybody." Cheers and applause erupted before he could finish his answer. A woman in the second row remarked, "Mic drop." The Battle of HB 318. Cunningham has held office since she ran unopposed in a newly drawn district in 2012. 2 years after the death of her husband, longtime Charlotte area legislator Pete Cunningham. She's been largely quiet, which the Charlotte Observer acknowledged in a 2018 editorial endorsement. Cunningham has struggled to make an impact in the Republican-dominated House. But with last year's House Bill 318, her votes pushed a controversial piece of legislation into law. The Criminal Illegal Alien Enforcement Act requires sheriffs to determine the immigration status of all jail inmates and hold them for an additional 48 hours if ICE issued what's known as a detainer request. Some North Carolina sheriffs, including Gary McFadden in Mecklenburg County, have resisted cooperation with ICE. The intent of the bill was to require it. State House Speaker Destin Hall, Majority Leader Brendan Jones, and two other Republican lawmakers were the primary sponsors. The bill passed both houses of the General Assembly on June 10th. Cunningham was the only Democrat in the General Assembly who backed it. Stein vetoed it 10 days later, saying it was unconstitutional to detain people for up to 48 hours after they would otherwise be released. An override vote was scheduled for July 29th. A few days later, Sadler called Cunningham. He said in a recent interview that he wasn't yet considering a run for the District 106 seat. But Sadler, who's been active in the Reverend William Barber II's Moral Mondays protests and other progressive causes, said he'd heard from colleagues of his in the Poor People's Campaign that Cunningham was thinking about joining Republicans to override Stein's veto. The initial vote was one thing, but a veto override is a matter of party loyalty. House Republicans are one vote shy of a veto-proof legislative supermajority. Cunningham's defection would ensure HB 318 became law and hand an embarrassing loss to Stein and her fellow Democrats. Sadler told the Assembly he urged Cunningham not to do it. The Bible professor and director of the Center for Social Justice and Reconciliation at Union Presbyterian Seminary was on a writing retreat at a Highlands cabin, co-owned by former Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts, but he said he felt a responsibility to speak to the lawmaker. "We talked for about 45 minutes and I told her what the moral reasons were," Sadler said. "This is what God says in the Bible, Leviticus chapter 19, 33-34. Matthew chapter 25. We talked over and over again about the moral responsibility, and we ended that conversation with her saying, 'I'm going to do what I'm going to do.'" The Leviticus verses advise, The stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you, and thou shalt love him as thyself. Cunningham confirmed via email that this conversation happened, but said it did not influence her vote. I do not have a relationship with Reverend Sadler. On July 29th, Cunningham was the only Democrat in the House or Senate who voted to override the veto. And she did more than that. Cunningham had always identified as a conservative Democrat. But from the floor, she made remarks that could have come from a MAGA influencer. It is time for my unapologetic truth to be shared with all of you, she said. It's not just the numbers that matter, but also where the immigrants come from and the culture they bring with them. All cultures are not equal. I suggest they must assimilate, adapt to the culture of the country they wish to live in. The speech made more news than the vote. Clips of Cunningham went viral, and immigrants and their advocates flooded her Facebook page and other social media with accusations of racism and xenophobia, which only accelerated in November during Charlotte's Web. The backlash took material form too. The state party's executive council decided to deny Cunningham and three other candidates who bucked the party access to crucial voter contact software. On January 4th, Cunningham posted a video to her website. She said a spirit of disharmony surrounded me before the vote, and that she had received several threats from elected officials and community leaders in the days before it. She later told the Assembly she had perceived only one threat of physical violence from McFadden. She accused the sheriff of telling her during a phone conversation that if she voted with Republicans, people would come after her and that he didn't want to see her get hurt. McFadden, in turn, accused Cunningham of waging a smear campaign. District Attorney Spencer Merriweather referred her accusations against McFadden to the State Bureau of Investigation. No resolution had been made public as of late February. Cunningham also apologised in her video for causing offence during her floor speech, saying she takes full accountability for her words and her actions and wants to focus on unity. HB 318, however, is now law, and in a February interview she said she stands by her vote and her views on immigration. The party has been extreme left on a lot of different things, and I'm more in the middle, she said. Today, we're in Black History Month. I'm free. I don't toe the line like that. My constituents come first for me. I know I'm not in charge. After Cunningham's speech, Sadler said a group of local party leaders and immigrant advocates urged him to run. When she actually went on the floor and made the vote, I think that was disturbing, and a lot of people in my own circle were upset by that, Sadler said. But when she followed it up with that horrible speech, it was something that stirred me to say she is no longer qualified to serve as our representative. He announced his candidacy in September, well before the filing period opened on December 1st. Sadler told the Assembly he started early because he knew how hard it would be to defeat a long-time incumbent. That has also helped fill his campaign chest. As of the end of January, Sadler's total receipts more than doubled Cunningham's, $121,820 to $57,449, according to the State Board of Elections candidate finance records. Yet nearly all the public officials and immigrant advocates contacted for this story declined to comment. One exception was José Hernández Paris, the CEO of the Latin American Coalition, the main advocacy and support organization for Latino immigrants in the Charlotte area. Hernandez Paris, a Colombian immigrant who lives in District 106, said he doesn't know Cunningham well, but was extremely surprised by her remarks last July. I was surprised that she would make comments without realizing that she's also part of a community that has experienced similar situations and challenges, Hernandez Paris said. He added that he's known Sadler for years and probably would have supported him anyway. Cunningham said she sees no conflict between her views on immigration and her status as an ADOS, or American descendant of slavery, a term she used during her floor speech. I've always been an independent thinker, she said, and I'm not going to allow anybody to take that from me because, like I said, I'm free. ADOS is a decade-old movement led by a non-profit the ADOS Advocacy Foundation. The group calls on the U.S. government to exclusively designate the descendants of slavery as a protected class and pay a minimum of $20 trillion in reparations. The foundation issued a news release in January that condemned the state Democrats' decision to deny Cunningham access to the voter software, and she was a guest on the foundation's podcast in February. The furore over her position has eclipsed discussion about what either candidate hopes to accomplish if elected. Cunningham cites her experience and claims she has helped direct $23 million to Mecklenburg County nonprofits. Sadler promises he will stand up to corporate interests and represent working families. Both echo the bromide of working across the aisle, but both concede that, as members of the minority party, they can't do much to push legislation. "I may not be effective at all. I recognise that reality," Sadler said. "But if I can sustain the governor's veto when they try to do the worst things that they do to the people of North Carolina, then that would be worth it." "I know I'm not in charge," Cunningham said at the January 15th forum. "I know I don't have power." At the forum's conclusion, host and Charlotte Black Voter Project co-founder Colette Forrest voiced her own view of power and powerlessness. "When have we ever been in charge?" she asked. "Where would we be if we waited to be in charge to make change?" The candidates for sheriff and county commissioner, plus Sadler, Bowman, and the crowd at Little Rock AME Zion Church, applauded and nodded in approval. Cunningham didn't. She wasn't in the hall anymore. The District 106 segment had been the first of the forum, and once it wrapped, the incumbent and her team collected their things and walked out into the cold. Now, the follow-up to that article, which comes after the primary. Cunningham loses in State House primary focused on immigration policy. And this is by Kate Shepherd. After more than a decade in office, State Representative Carla Cunningham appeared to lose her Democratic primary on Tuesday by a significant margin. Her main opponent was the Reverend Rodney Sadler, a 58-year-old biblical scholar and political newcomer. With all precincts reporting Tuesday night, Sadler was just shy of 70% to Cunningham's 22%. Vermano Bowman finished third with just over 8%. The race in NC House District 106, which covers parts of Northeast Charlotte and Huntersville, was more contentious this year than anyone might have expected. Past primaries for Cunningham, a seven-term incumbent, were barely contested, and in this heavily Democratic district, winning the general election was a foregone conclusion. But this year's race was seen as a test of how Democratic voters are responding to increased immigration enforcement under President Donald Trump and the Republican majority legislature. Cunningham drew the wrath of many in her party last summer when she cast a decisive vote to override Governor Josh Stein's veto of an immigration bill requiring sheriffs to determine the status of county jail inmates and hold them for an additional 48 hours if ICE issues a detainer request. She was the only Democrat in the General Assembly who backed it. After her vote, Cunningham delivered a floor speech declaring all cultures are not equal and that immigrants must assimilate, adapt to the culture of the country they wish to live in. It drew swift rebuke from immigrant advocates and other Democrats. Tensions on the ground increased last November when the Trump administration increased immigration enforcement operations in her district as part of Operation Charlotte's Web. Stein then took the rare step of siding with Cunningham's primary challenger. The state party also denied her campaign access to its voter contact software. Looking now at federal results in the primary, Buckhout wins first district primary set for Davis rematch. And this is an article by Brian Anderson. Army veteran Lauren Buckhout won a hotly contested Republican primary in the first congressional district on Tuesday. She'll now advance to a rematch with Democratic U.S. Representative Don Davis, in which she hopes to become the first Republican to hold the seat since 1883. Buckhout edged out Carteret County Sheriff Asa Buck State Senator Bobby Hannig of Currituck County, Lenoir County Commissioner Eric Rouse, and divorce attorney Ashley Nicole Russell. I spent my career as a U.S. Army colonel leading troops in combat and defending this country, Buckhout said in a statement Tuesday. Now I'm ready to take that same mission, first leadership, to Washington. Buckhout spent heavily on the race, including a $2 million personal loan to her campaign. Ads touted her military service, cyber policy work last year in the Trump administration's Department of Defense, and the president's embrace of her in the 2024 general election. Buck and Hannig both unsuccessfully sought to present themselves as better representatives of local voters, highlighting their long-standing ties to the district compared to the 5 years Buckhout has lived in the state since selling a Virginia-based military consulting company. Buckhout narrowly lost to Davis in 2024, but Republican state lawmakers last year redrew the district from a toss-up to an area that President Donald Trump would have won by 11.6 percentage points. Even so, the general election contest between Buckhout and Davis is one of a few dozen competitive seats nationwide and is widely seen as North Carolina's most competitive congressional race. Buckhout has pledged to support Trump's tariffs and said she trusts the president's foreign policy in Iran. She also said she'll prioritize economic development across the district. The Republican Party has become the party of the working man and woman, and we're going to be working to relieve working families of some of the government overreach that's making their lives harder, Buckhout told the Assembly last month. This article was written by Brian Anderson, who is a politics reporter for the Assembly. He covers state government and he anchors a twice-weekly politics newsletter, The Caucus. He previously covered elections, voting access, and state government for WRAL-TV, the Associated Press, and the News and Observer. And finally, just a word on the senatorial primary. Last July, an Emerson College poll found two-thirds of North Carolinians had never heard of Michael Whatley. Between now and November, his name is likely to be one of the two most uttered in the state as he competes in what could be the most expensive U.S. Senate race in history. Whatley, the former co-chair of the Republican National Committee and chair of the NCGOP, came out atop a field of six on Tuesday to secure his party's nomination for the Senate seat that Republican Tom Tillis currently holds. Whatley will face Democratic former Governor Roy Cooper, a name basically everyone in the state already knows. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time for today's episode of the Assembly. We hope you enjoyed a little roundup of what happened in the primary last Tuesday. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5133.